We begin with the political junkie. Welcome back, Ken, and good to have you on a Wednesday. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, Carrie. And I don't know if I'm looking forward to this conversation or dreading it.
I know. If you watched the president's press conference yesterday or you heard excerpts today, I think Ken and I would be curious to hear what you think. So here's the number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at @CarrieMPR. I have to say, Ken, the president's reaction and the changing tone and tenor of what he said, I find this all so mystifying. Is he taking any advice from the people around him?
Well, maybe he was on Monday when he gave a clear denunciation of the white supremacists and the Klan and the neo-Nazis. But somehow, yesterday, when he reverted back to last Saturday about both sides and many sides and things like that, like as if there's a moral equivalency between Nazis and people who are opposing the Nazis, somehow I feel that yesterday was the real Donald Trump. And I keep thinking that you know, when John Kelly came on as chief of staff and he came on to create some kind of semblance of order in this White House. If you watch the Trump event, the press conference, or whatever you want to call it, in the hallway of the Trump Tower, John Kelly was standing to the side with his arms crossed and his head down. It looked like my goodness, what did I get myself involved in?
Is that what you think he was thinking?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is somebody who really wanted to create order. There was chaos with the Scaramucci and the Reince Priebus and all the tweets, and yet the tweets have not stopped. The foreign policy by tweet has not stopped about the threat against North Korea that was not advanced to the Defense Department or the National Security Council or things like that. He does what he does. He's an impulsive president, and no chief of staff, disciplinarian or not, can control this. And yesterday proved it.
CNN is reporting right now that Mitch McConnell is upset with the nature of the and you feel sorry for him. But here's why I bring that. Wait a minute. Here's why I bring that up.
Okay.
Because Mitch McConnell's wife was standing
right
next to Elaine Chao, who is in Trump's cabinet as transportation secretary, is standing right next to him as he says all this stuff about these good people that got swept up with the neo-Nazi crowd in Charlottesville.
Well, not only was she standing right immediately to Donald Trump's left or to the screen's right, but she had this frozen fixed smile on her face throughout the entire event. Now, given the fact how President Trump trashes her husband, Mitch McConnell, on almost a daily basis, it's interesting that he'll trash Mitch McConnell, he'll trash Kenneth Frazier, the African-American head of Merck, in a tweet within hours of being, you know, coming when he comes across something he doesn't like. But white supremacists, it took him 2 days to say a real denunciation until Monday. And even that was fake and phony because obviously he read it from a teleprompter. Wiser heads in the White House obviously wrote it. And then, of course, he threw that script out on Tuesday when he went back to his both sides are both equal.
I thought we would play a little bit of an excerpt here of what the president said. This is yesterday's press conference responding to some of the criticism that had come from the days before. Let's listen.
I watched those very closely, much more closely than you people watched it. And you have you had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now. You had a group on the other side that came charging in without a permit, and they were very, very violent.
Maybe nobody wants to say that because it really is inaccurate. There were some members there of this Antifa, right? And who are they, Ken? Maybe you should describe them.
Well, the Antifa is the short term for the anti-fascists, and they are a left-wing group. And are they looking for trouble? And are they looking for violence? Yes, they are. I mean, they came ready with clubs and sticks and you know, urine-filled balloons, and they were out to battle them. But they were also pastors and people of faith and people who just came to just march silently and mournfully when you have a city that's overrun by neo-Nazis, Klansmen, walking around with swastikas and chanting, I mean, you know, Jews, you know, about the Jews and Hitler and things like that. And to say, for Donald Trump to say that, you know, good people were also there because all they wanted to do was protest the taking down of a statue. Well, I mean, I don't think he doesn't see what he's doing. I think, one, he likes to equate. They've come up with the alt-left opposite of the alt-right. I think they like that false equivalency. Monday and Saturday and all those days since the violence in Charlottesville, it was a day for presidential leadership and moral authority, and the president did not provide it at all.
Call here from Peter in St. Louis Park. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Tom Patterson, researcher at Harvard, did some studies on how the media over-covered Donald Trump in the primary by a factor of 8-1 compared to all the other candidates, and practically gifted us this guy who's insane. Charlottesville was not overrun by neo-Nazis. Neo-Nazis have been trying to get attention for years. They've been just as much of a surface as much as ever in their events. People have been paying attention. And it looks to me like in order to drive a conflict narrative, the press has given them the bullhorn that they could never, ever have dreamed of happening. And so I take issue with the overrunning. I think that makes a good story. And like the guy at CBS said, Trump is the worst thing for the country, but the best thing for our ratings. I think what's going on. I think the media better figure out how to deal with this because they're causing damage.
Okay, so Ken, I've been thinking about what Peter brought up here with these marches that are now planned for this coming weekend, and I thought, the media coverage, we're going to give these groups pretty much what they want because there's going to be blanketed media coverage in these cities where they're going to do these marches. And I think Peter has a point here about how the media has to think about how we're going to cover this.
Well, I don't know how you not cover.
You have to cover it.
The fact is, I mean, there's so many. I think Peter makes a very good point in the fact that these were basically fringe elements of the extreme right that people have been watching for years. I mean, I'm old enough to remember George Lincoln Rockwell and the American Nazi Party back in the 60s when they would have their marches or whatever and nobody would pay attention. But the Richard Spencers of the world and the Kesslers of the world, they were not interviewed on network television. David Duke wasn't given a platform the way that the fringe people were ignored in the 60s. It was interesting and instructive to me that David Duke said he said that we're here to fulfill the promises of President Trump. And what he said after yesterday's so-called press conference, Duke said, "This is great news. I felt that the president was really very fair and even-handed." When David Duke praises the president for what he said about race relations in this country, you know we have a big issue here. But yes, the media did create Donald Trump. We know that it was a great story, and they couldn't take their eyes off him. But what they failed to notice, and what they're finally noticing now, is that it almost gave these fringe right-wing extremist groups a license to come out and go public, not only in the media, but if you go on social media, you'll see things about blacks and Jews and anybody else they talk about with no hesitation at all. That it seems like Trump's election has emboldened these groups to just come out what had been in the closet for so many years.
But Ken, I mean, the dilemma, as you've just noted and as I've been talking about, is we the media. You can't ignore these stories. They come ready for violence, but we also give them with this kind of coverage exactly what they want. I mean, you quoting David Duke, his tweet has been everywhere.
Right.
And the minute I saw that tweet, I thought he's getting exactly the kind of attention that he hasn't had for years. It's a real dilemma about what the media
does. No, that's exactly
does.
My point. I mean, we used to ignore these people as just loony fringe people who just have this gripe against, and you know, and God bless. But now they are, Richard Spencer and David Duke are on the network news as much as, you know, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, and that is just remarkable.
Right. I wanted to read something that I saw Michael Gerson wrote over the weekend, because he really gets at the idea of where this violence took place and what you said about the president's lack of moral authority. Gerson, and by the way, Gerson, a former Bush speechwriter, he's a Republican. He said, but Trump could offer no context for this latest conflict, no inspiring ideals from the author of the Declaration of Independence, who called Charlottesville home, no healing words from the president who was killed by a white supremacist. By his flat, foolish utterance, Trump proved once again that he has no place in the company of these leaders. That moral authority thing is something that I guess Americans are willing to give a president the benefit of the doubt on, but you have to earn it. You know what I'm saying with that?
Well, I do completely, and I agree completely about the lack of a moral authority here, but I'm just waiting for, when do the John Kellys, the Elaine Chows, I mean, to watch her stand there with that frozen smile was just so painful. But, and yet you'll have the denunciations from the Jeb Bushes and the Mitt Romneys, but when does Congress say, or the Republicans in Congress say, enough is enough? And when do, I mean, you do see some profiles and courage of the leadership council, the business council of those like Ken Frazier and Richard Trumka and others who have resigned in protest over Charlottesville. But other than just denouncing the president and saying that he could have provided more leadership, I suspect that at some point the Republicans are going to say that linking ourselves or being passive in this administration is politically untenable, and we'll see what happens.
Ken, I was curious about what you thought of the tenor of that press conference yesterday, just in the interaction between the media and the president. The media, I have to say, I really winced when I saw reporters just shouting at the top of their lungs at the president, and then the president screaming back at them. I mean, it was like something from the WWF or something, you know. It lost all of its trappings of a presidential press conference.
Yeah, I almost thought it was the WTF, but I agree with you completely. And this is what upset me about it. I mean, I have watched this for several months. Look, there's no question that Donald Trump has this tremendous antipathy for the press and contempt for the press. But it's also clear, and we saw this with Jim, I guess it was Jim Acosta or of CNN.
Yes, that's right.
His battle with Stephen Miller at a press conference. I don't like that role of the press. I don't want them to get in the gutter. Look, it's one thing for the president of the United States to be a bully and get into the gutter and just be screaming. But somehow, you know something? I don't know what the answer is. I don't think that, you know, I remember years ago when Dan Rather asked a question of Richard Nixon, and it was kind of like insulting on both ways. Both sides were aggressive, and I kind of winced at that. And I wince when the press comes out of its normal behavior, but nothing is normal anymore. Nothing, when you have a president who's afraid or refuses to condemn Nazis and white supremacists, or at least at the minimum equate them, I could see look, I'm not condoning anything, but I can see it becoming a food fight, and that's really unfortunate for the media.
I mean, that's exactly what it felt like, though. You've just put your finger on it, a food fight. And I don't want to see the media, already, you know, low in trust within the American electorate, behave the way a lot of Americans see as inappropriate for the president. Let me grab a call on this to Wes. And
can I just say one thing quickly?
Yeah, go ahead.
Count on one hand the number of press conferences the president, solo press conferences the president has had since he's president. The answer is one.
Well, to be fair, he does take questions from the media,
he does.
And he does those in more informal places, and even then it has this feel of a scrum, you know, like a rugby scrum where everybody's jostling. So I don't really think that's an excuse for the behavior.
No, that's fair.
Let me grab a call here from Wes in Big Lake. Hi, Wes.
Hi, Carrie. Thank you so much for taking my call. Sure. You know, I grew up in the 60s in South Carolina. And let me tell you, the racism in the 80s was so hard to combat because they were hidden. Let us not kid ourselves. These people are woven in every fabric of our society. What the media is doing is exactly what I want them to do. They are bringing them out of the closet. Let them come out, because that's the only way we can attack or battle this thing or deal with it. We need to know who these people are. Now, African-Americans like myself have always known they were there. White people are surprised now. Now they're seeing what we've always known. Let them come out and leave the media alone. They're doing a fine job as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Well, Wes, I think that's a pretty compelling argument, and it speaks to what Ken and I were talking about at the beginning, which is, what do you do as a member of the media giving them the attention that they want? And this is going to be all weekend long, Ken, with these 9 marches. But I hear Wes on that.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I don't think white people are surprised by what they're seeing, because we've known about the David Dukes and the Richard Spencers for months. What I think we're all aghast at, and maybe Wes is making the point that it's good that they're coming out in the open, but it's, to me, the fact that you're seeing them on national TV, on network TV, as if they have this authority to state a claim on the American public is just really absolutely just remarkable and revolting at the same time.
One last thought here from Twitter, where Anna says, what the media should do is focus on the stories of the anti-racist protesters, not the racists, so they don't get what they want. But I expect a lot of coverage of the racists and their demonstrations over the weekend, don't you?
How do you not cover a march down Charlottesville, the cradle of democracy,
right,
where Thomas Jefferson founded freedom of the press and all that stuff, freedom of speech, and you see swastikas and Nazi regalia? It's just.
It's sickening. It is.
I'll talk to you
on Monday, Ken. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks.
The political junkie with us usually on Mondays, and he'll be back on Monday.